Boy, he was glad, I'm sure. Very, very glad. That's an understatement. James Martin was overjoyed that folks decided to search diligently for him. James Martin, some of you might remember, is that snowboarder that was found after 3 days missing on the mountain, Mount Seymour, in North Vancouver, just north of North Van. He'd gone off snowboarding, a little off trail, and had fallen into difficulty, was there buried for 3 days. They searched and they searched and they searched, and they found him. That's a good news story. We know that in the same week there were 8 avalanche victims who were snowmobiling that were covered. They searched and they searched and they searched and they found them, to the relief of the family, because they recovered their bodies. So even in the midst of their grief, they are grateful that their bodies have been recovered. There's a lot of searching going on. Searching in this congregation, searching for minister of youth and young families and children. We're each searching in our own ways for that place of peace, that hope, that renewed relationship, that new job. Searching is going on in our political sphere for a solution to what is going on in Gaza. The political reality and the suffering is rife. The searching for answers. Searching is going on all over the place. And our story today from the gospel lesson is about searching and invites us to search. But there's a particular word that is attached to the search that qualifies, I think, what we are meant to be about. Herod, in his duplicitous way, a way of trying to trick these wise ones, ask them to go and search diligently for the child, and when they have found him, to come back and tell him so that he could go and worship the child too. Wink, wink. For we know that those were not Herod's motives. But at least he speaks some truth. That word, diligently, makes all the difference. In Greek, it has that tense, that sense, but also accurately, probing the whole picture, probing everything. And I think that that is the large mandate that is offered to us through this text and this season of Epiphany. To search with a particular quality, a particular acuity, a particular diligence, a particular commitment, in order that we may discover what we have perhaps thought we knew. We have assumed, we've heard this story so many times that sometimes, maybe even starting to read it, some of you may tune out because, well, I know how that ends and how it goes. But search diligently. Search like we're searching for that lost snowboarder. Eager, desperately, to find someone. The story unfolds in the context of the political theater. Herod is part of that Jewish family that ruled as a puppet king, as it were, or puppet administration of the Roman government and the Roman Empire from about 55 before the Common Era to almost near the end of the first century, the Common Era. And they were a family that passed down through succession installation by Rome so that they could oversee a particular territory, largely for two main reasons. One, to ensure the system of collecting taxes, and to ensure the peace, to keep an eye on insurrectionists. And so Herod, ruling from about 37 to 4 BC, or before the Common Era, is the one being spoken of here. This Herod, we know him from history, and those who were his contemporaries that wrote of him, was fearful. He was maniacal in holding on to power. So when the wise ones come from Persia and tell him that we have followed the stars, this was their occupation, as it were. They were stargazers. And there's something about what they saw that identified, I believe, through God's instruction, that there was to be a king in Judea. There was to be a king in this place. Now, the star did not lead them to Jerusalem. They made the assumption, even having been gifted with this star, they made the assumption that if a king is to be born, it must be at the center of political power. And so they went there, searching and looking. They find Herod. Now Herod gathers together his council. He gathers together the Sanhedrin, the chief priests and the scribes, those who knew the law, those who were the political leaders and the religious leaders, to find out. They do, as in the words of Tom Long, a massive Bible study to find out, where is this Messiah to be born? And they come upon a number of scriptures, as it were, from Micah, 1 Samuel, and Matthew conflates them together to indicate that this place, Bethlehem, not the center, but on the margins. And so right away, Matthew, as he is very gifted at doing, sets up attention. For in the same phrase, the word king is mentioned both times, twice, and not of the same person. There's a king, there's born a king, and then we're told that he's addressing King Herod. So there's a battle. There can only be one king in this place. So already we know trouble is coming. And sure enough, Herod tries to trick them, tries to use them to go and find out where this child is so that he could come, not in worship. We know him for his true colors. But if we're to search this diligently, search what this has to say to us today, we notice a few things. We notice something about the nature of these people who have come and what they have to say and the gifts that they bring. Nobody knows for certain who these wise ones were. We're not even told there are three. The tradition is that three, because there are three gifts, but the Bible doesn't tell us the number. There could have been many, many more than three. Some even jokingly have said that maybe they weren't men at all, that they probably had to be women. They say, well, why would you say that? Why did these have to be women? Well, they actually asked for directions. That's why. We don't know everything there is to know about these wise ones. What we do know is that they came from that area of the world, what is probably now today Iran, Iraq, Persia area. There were those people in the society that spent their time studying the stars. In fact, what is pretty scandalous about this particular story that Matthew has, it seems very quaint and we have nice little crest scenes about it, is the fact that the kind of occupation, not only were there foreigners and so-called pagans, but the occupation that they had was specifically prohibited by Judaism. Delving in fortune-telling, in trying to find out how these stars met what we might call horoscopic activity today. And here, these ones have come. As the reading from Isaiah says, they have come to bring tribute to the one who is promised. And they come and they lay their treasures down. But there's a secret. If we are going to search diligently, there's a secret even in the nature of the gifts. Gold, frankincense was anticipated. Gold is what is brought to a king. Frankincense usually associated with the worship life and temple life of many peoples. And so they're brought to this baby to say, you are recognized as king. You are indeed the priest, the one who is the intermediary. But why the myrrh? That is not spoken of in Isaiah. Why the gift of myrrh? Matthew, I believe, includes that purposely to state at the outset of his gospel what this life represents, what this one represents, the mission. Here are people coming, the nations, because the goal of calling the people of Israel to live in a particular way, to worship the one God and to follow this ethical way of life and this just way of life, was so that the people of the world would be blessed, would see it and want to emulate that. So it always has been about the world. God's desire for all the world to come, but there's something that this nation, these foreign members come and teach the people, or some of the people of Israel, about this God whom they worship, that many in the religious establishment did not anticipate. Let us search diligently and find out what. This myrrh is a symbol of death. It is what is used as anointing for over dead bodies. It was a very aromatic element. And in fact, in the time when Matthew is writing, that myrrh was at the height, at the zenith of its trade in the Near East. So including this as one of the gifts that is given is a statement at the outset that this God whom they have come to recognize, this one who has come from God, is a God who is willing to be vulnerable, to come as one of us in human form, and who is going to die. Right at the outset. Now that's not the kind of news you want at the birth. But here Matthew is not bringing a romantic gospel, is bringing a good news gospel. For the way in which Jesus would live would always attract people like these wise ones. Those who were outside of the margin. Those who knew themselves perhaps to be despised. Why did the lepers and the women and the poor and the scoundrels find a home with Jesus? This God is one who comes to turn on its head the traditions and the status quo of life, to demonstrate to us that we are meant, all meant for God. This is the light that is shining. This is the illumination that is taking place. This myrrh is troublesome. It's troublesome. It reminds me of, some of you may have seen the Monty Python Life of Brian. I know it may seem kind of irreverent to bring that up, but I think it has something to say. Monty Python Life of Brian has this particular scene in it when the wise ones come and offer to marry the gifts. And there's a scene where they've discovered the Messiah and they give these gifts to Brian. That's who they call the Messiah. Gold and frankincense and myrrh. Now Mary in this depiction of Monty Python likes the gold and likes the frankincense, but is not so sure about the myrrh. And in fact tries to give it back when they leave. It may be that that is a symbol of what we might find uncomfortable. Uncomfortable, but that here in the economy of God's grace, as we search diligently what this might mean for us, that those whom we may have discounted are included, not only included, but are the chief ones that help us to see the nature of the God whom we worship. So we ask that of ourselves today in our own context. Who is it that is coming from on the periphery, that God has somehow used where they are, what they are familiar with, in order to draw them to this Christ? But in coming, they bring a perspective and they bring a particular way of engaging God that might throw us off kilter. These wise ones are not innocuous. They're not quaint. They're disruptors to the status quo. And they remind us that in the long story of God's grace, it has always been about those whom we have put aside. If you look at the genealogy of Jesus, there are some very questionable characters in there. Spies and prostitutes, those who have questionable character in his lineage. God doesn't make those distinctions. So searching this story diligently may cause us to challenge our assumptions and our prejudices, and also the way in which we believe God speaks to people. It's interesting. They would have been considered pseudoscientists, these magi, where they were. And I just recently, just in the last week, have heard, yesterday on the CBC, you may have heard, scientists have confirmed that cultivating a spirit of gratitude is good for you. Well, thank you very much. We needed to wait until scientific discovery affirmed what not only wise traditions have known for a long time, but Jesus talked and the Hebrew scriptures speak of. Also read, those who write in scientific journals, that those who cultivate sharing and trust and generosity, they actually have, with electrodes on the brain and magnetic resonance, see the brain lights up when they're able to reproduce those in laboratory scenarios. So in other words, it is good for the community and it is good for us to be trusting, to be generous, to be grateful, to be open with our spirit to others. Well, hello. Haven't we heard that before? Is that not the long, long story of God's grace and God's invitation for us to live the way we're meant to live? Search diligently. And I think in closing, that when we search diligently, this is the greatest discovery we will make. For we are searching and we are trying to look and take care to not miss anything so that we may be surprised, we may be affirmed, we may be healed, we may be blessed. But the greatest discovery in our searching diligently, I believe, will be that we are the ones who are being sought. That it is God who has been searching diligently for you and for me and for this world. That God is leaving no stone unturned to find out where we are in our lives, where we are in our hopes and our aspirations, where we are in our sin and our prejudices, where we are in our pain and our suffering. God has been searching diligently for you and for me and for this world, so that peace and justice and joy may reign supreme. That's the greatest discovery of our searching. And my prayer for me and for you and for this world, seemingly in the Middle East now on the brink of all-out war, maybe in your life the tumult feels like that. Maybe the things that are going on or that happened over the holiday season with all, everybody's merriment, you have discovered something, whether health-related, a secret in the family, or a relationship gone awry. Maybe your world feels like it's turning upside down. But I want to pray that you and I would allow ourselves to be found by God who is searching diligently for us. And that like these wise ones who in a dream were warned not to return to Herod, that you and I, starting out this year, would go home from this place, this gathered worship, by another way. Not instead of the Queen's way going on Scott, but another way theologically, spiritually, that somehow your heart would have been startled and kindled with a deep gratitude and peace because this God has found you, who has been searching for you. You see, the stars, nature can help us, point us towards God. But notice in this story that in addition to the natural phenomena of the stars, they needed the scriptures. The scriptures to find out how to shape that wonder, how to focus, whom to worship, and the community in order to help make sense of that. This congregation matters. You matter. What God reveals to us in the great expanse of God's wondrous creation matters. What matters most is that God is always on the lookout for you and me, searching us, searching for us diligently. That's good news. I don't know of any better news to tell you. May you and I go home by another way. Amen.